Welcome to High Ticket Woman, the podcast for Christian women who are relationship challenged, and they know that to make changes, it starts with them wanting more, expecting more, and becoming more. Here's your host, Debbie Cottle.
Hey, Debbie Pierce here. Welcome back to another episode of High Ticket Woman. Today, I have a expert woman with me, Shanoa Miller, and she is a financial advisor, and she has all kinds of licenses that she holds. I'm just going to read a little bit from what she sent me. She's got the FINRA Series 6, 7, which is incredibly hard to get, 66 and 63 security licenses. And she also has her life and health insurance license. So we're going to talk to her a lot today about money and all things financial related. She also holds designations or certifications as a retirement counselor and as a divorce financial analyst, which is super interesting to me. And I want to talk a little more about that too. She is a top financial advisor. She's worked with thousands of clients, helping them save and invest so they can retire comfortably, as well as recovering financially after a divorce or other major life event. But that's not it, because she's also an expert. She has over 20 years of experience in the fitness industry as well. So she's got a lot to talk to us today about that too. She's a certified group fitness instructor, and she's a competitor and coach in the HERS Muscle and Fitness organization. And she's instructed group classes all over the world and helps people reach their health and fitness goals. Shanoa, thank you so much for being a guest on today's episode. I'm super happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. You are so well qualified to talk about something that we don't talk much about, or I don't hear people talk much about when it comes to a woman's relationship with money. But I want to start off, before we even do that, I want to ask you, because I ask everybody starting out, what does the concept of high ticket mean to you specifically?
Yeah, when I was thinking about the concept of high ticket, it really signifies something that has above average value or more worth than something maybe in a similar category. And as a financial advisor, it kind of equated to me the lingo high net worth or high net worth client, yeah, who has, you know, above average means or above average level of assets than the benchmark. So that's what really kind of popped out in my mind, was, you know, high net worth, high ticket. And as far as a high ticket woman, you know, to me, that would be somebody who really puts a lot of emphasis on her own worth and her own value. She has confidence and self-awareness. And a high ticket woman is independent and knows the importance of growth and evolution and investing in herself.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. You have a unique voice to talk to women about being, you know, that ultra high net worth, you know, when it comes to self-worth and money. So what's the connection from your perspective with a woman who values herself and the way a woman treats money?
I think that, you know, a woman that understands the value of money also values herself. And not that she has to put her value into monetary assets, but she knows the importance of being involved, being educated around money and finance, and what an important part and aspect of her life that it plays.
Yeah. And I mean, you must see, in working with women as a financial advisor, you must see a lot. So what are some of the ways that you feel like women devalue themselves when it comes to money, like spending and saving and investing?
I think the biggest way that women devalue themselves is by not being involved in the familial finances. You know, if they're married or have a family, I've heard so many women over the years, you know, say, well, that's his thing. I'm not really involved in the finances. I don't know. And it just pains me on so many levels to hear women, you know, kind of just check out of, you know, the financial matters. It's so important for you to be involved and play a role and have a voice in what is going on in terms of finances in your own home. And oftentimes, sadly to say, there have been many times in my career as a financial advisor that the first time I actually met the wife or the woman was when the husband passed away. You know, I've worked with many, many clients for many years, and the wives, many of them never attended the reviews, the financial reviews. Typically, the male will predecease his wife, and then I have these widows in my office who are just clueless and helpless and you know, it breaks my, just completely lost. Very sad.
So I was going to ask you why. I mean, because I think it's an obvious question for the women out there listening who are still married, who still want nothing to do with, you know, the money end of things, or they trust their husband to handle paying the bills, or interestingly, sometimes I'll see women who are paying the bills, but they have a lot of anxiety and stress over money. They're not, they are risk takers. They're not willing to take risks when it comes to money. And so I'll see that. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, paying the bills and being involved in investments and retirement accounts, those are two totally different things. You know, the bills are very absolutely black and white. You know, this is this is what you owe. You know, you pay it online, you write a check, whatever the case may be. But I think a lot of women shy away from investments and retirement accounts simply because they don't understand it and they're afraid to ask. They're afraid to speak up. And I think it's fantastic if you trust your husband or your partner. You absolutely should. Yeah. Especially if you're going to, you know, put all of that responsibility on your partner. I hope you would trust them, but I don't think that you have to fully rely on somebody to handle the finances 100%. You should be an active participant.
With the partner,
Whether you're still, that's great if you're married, but not that I'm a glass half empty kind of person, but you know, nothing's guaranteed. So if your spouse should predecease you, or you would go through a divorce and you have no knowledge of any of the financial makeups, you know, of your household, it can be very detrimental in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And let's talk about divorce, because going through a divorce often puts women, it's usually the woman who ends up in a very precarious situation financially. Is that true? Would you agree?
It can be, but I feel like it's usually the woman who has the lack of knowledge about the finances, which puts her in the lesser position as far as negotiating and knowing what she's worth in the divorce, or, you know, what questions to ask. I feel like that lack of involvement during the marriage then puts her in a position of lesser power, an inequitable position if there shouldn't be a divorce.
So what do you, when you counsel women or advise women after a divorce, how do you go about doing that? I'm just curious. Like, how do you get them on a path towards financial, knowledge, I guess, or just understanding of what they need to do, and what steps do you walk them through?
So, you know, first, I like to talk to women about their feelings and perceptions, or perhaps misconceptions about money. You know, we all have feelings about money that originated somewhere, maybe from our childhood, maybe during our marriage, or just, you know, throughout our lives, different circumstances, different jobs may cause us to have, you know, place different emphasis on money, different value around money. So I think, you know, when it's important to understand what your relationship with money is first.
Yeah.
And once you know what type of investor you are, or if you're an investor at all and kind of know your feelings around money and where they originated from, then we can build from there.
So you start with like, what are their money mindsets?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Money mindset. You know, do you have a scarcity mindset? Are you somebody who spends, you know, frivolously? There are a lot of different kind of money personalities out there that, you know, may surprise some people.
Can you speak to some of those? Because I think that's something that the listeners would be really intrigued to hear.
Sure. You know, there is the frivolous spender who just has no idea about the value of money, that, you know, is very quick to get out her credit card and the immediate gratification. You know, we see those types of spenders, have to have it now, can't wait, you know, got to keep up with the Joneses kind of mindset.
The impulsive buyer, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Impulsive buyer, an emotional buyer, you know, so, what do they call it? Retail therapy, right? You know, we got emotional eaters, we got emotional shoppers too, that, you know, might deflect other issues by shopping or buying material things. There are, you know, there's a scarcity mindset. Maybe women that grew up in households that, you know, money wasn't in abundance. And even if their circumstances have changed, I see a lot of professional women who earn high incomes, but they still have a fear around money and that they don't have enough, they're not saving enough. So the spectrum can be very broad when you're looking at the different money personalities.
Yeah, interesting. And that retail therapy is definitely something that I encounter a lot when I work with women. But another one that I've recently encountered, which is interesting, is the frugal spender, I guess we could call them. I was working recently with a younger woman in her early 20s who she graduated from university not that long ago. And her degree was in art, but she ended up taking an entry-level job that has nothing to do with her degree. So she was talking to me in one of our sessions about how she really wanted to go to an art museum on one of her days off, but it cost $20 to get in. And shouldn't she be saving up to get her own place and move out? And so she felt guilt about spending $20 on an entry fee. So we had to have this conversation about, what is the purpose of money if your life is just getting up and going to work and nothing else? Then what, you know, what's really actually going on here? Do you see much of that sort of frugal minded? Yeah,
that's what I would call a scarcity mindset. That you know, if I spend this $20 going to the museum, it's gonna detract from my bigger goals of saving for my own place. You know that. I'm putting a bigger emphasis on money and kind of having an unrealistic fear that you don't have enough or you're not saving enough. So, you know, that is a very one end of the spectrum. You know, it's very extreme end of the spectrum when people won't spend it. Almost equated to a depression mindset. You know, people that live through the depression and, you know, pinch every penny and use every resource, like my grandparents, you know, they had that depression mindset. And that's, it can be very real in young people too, if they grew up in an environment where there was, you know, money was also lacking.
The environment is really huge. I was working with a couple not that long ago, and I came to realize that a lot of the conflict they were having was around their mindsets about money, because he grew up basically being able to have whatever he wanted. She grew up in the exact opposite way. So she had a lot of anxiety and stress around money and the ability to pay the bills. How often do you see that when you're advising people that there's this conflict in the way that they view money that's now coming out in this power struggle?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. I mean, it's a lot of times, you know, in a couple, they've got a saver and a spender. Right. And the spender, they said, doesn't have very much regard for, you know, what they're spending on. And they're just kind of, you know, maybe not even frivolous, but they don't worry a whole lot about it. When the saver is, you know, really concerned about, how much they are putting away each month. You know, they assess a purchase before they make it. They're not as impulsive. And similarly to investment styles, when I am working with a client, whether it's a single person or a couple, I do a risk assessment questionnaire, you know, to see what type of portfolio, what their tolerance is.
Yeah.
And typically the husband and wife are complete opposites. You know, we've got one who is aggressive and one who's conservative. We typically meet somewhere in the middle on a balance. On those situations, let's just go with balance, because you two
are one of them is like crossing their fingers going, okay, I'll trust you. And the other one's like, this isn't enough. We can be really out there making a lot more money.
Interesting.
Is there, would you say there's a difference between being cheap versus frugal?
Yeah, I think frugal there definitely is a difference. Being frugal, I think you're more thoughtful. I would say that's what the word that would come to mind. When frugal, I'm thinking about a purchase. Do I really need this? Is it necessary? Can I do without it? When you're being cheap, you know, I feel like you're just cutting every corner, maybe not spending the money where you need to spend the money.
Sacrificing quality, maybe. Just
sacrifice price. You know, you don't want to sacrifice quality just to be cheap, because that usually turns around to
It's bit me in the butt many times. Yeah. I want to say, when my husband and I first married, we've been married almost 3.5 years. We had these conversations, and you know, we were able to laugh about the differences between us. But my husband is somebody who very much loves quality, so he is very much willing to spend more money to be able to have that quality experience or that, you know, quality item. And I've had this sort of, and I really value that in him. I really love that. He has elevated my experience of life, because, you know, I'm divorced, and in my first marriage, there was a scarcity mindset for sure. I would say with both of us, and it was always like, you know, don't spend, we've got to save. We didn't use credit cards, and you know, but Jeff has really sort of elevated my experience through all of this. And I've had to really assess, Debbie, in this moment, are you being cheap or are you being frugal? are you just wanting the lowest possible price, or are you looking for the best of what you can afford and you're willing to save for it to get the best quality experience? I think that there is a huge difference between cheap and frugal. Yeah. So I guess when you work with people, you're helping them to strike a balance between these three things, right? Spending and saving and investing. Do you help people like with budgeting, or what's your philosophy on budget?
Well, I mean, you have to have a budget. That's not typically my role, but it obviously comes into the conversation. We were talking about saving, investing, you know, what is your budget? I start with people, you know, sometimes I have to, especially with, you know, women in my financial goddess series, starting with the basics, like what is your income versus your expenses? And I am, you know, always surprised when, you know, women or any of my clients just don't know, like, what are your monthly expenses? Oh, I don't know. Well, we need to take a assessment, take an inventory of your expenses. And, you know, weigh that against your income. And, you know, you definitely want your expenses to be less than your income, or you're at a deficit, right? Or we've got a real problem and we got to rework the budget.
It was like common sense. But, you know, it used to be that we reconciled our checkbooks, but people don't really do that anymore, right? That seems like a thing of the past. So people just go to their bank statement and make sure that they have money. But that doesn't, at least from my perspective, as somebody who used to reconcile a checkbook, and now I don't do that anymore either. I have to reconcile, you know, in my accounting software, you know, because I'm self-employed. But so I get a better sense of what's going out or what's coming in that way. But so many people, they don't, just because they're looking at their statement doesn't really tell them where their money is going.
and everything being so electronic, it takes it, you know, takes from the old school ledger book. I think my mom still balances her ledger book. She still, the one time we went out to dinner, I didn't get the receipt for her credit card and she lost her mind because she takes the receipt, she puts it in the ledger book still. Like she wants to account for everything and she cross-references it with her statements. But everything being digital on our apps and stuff, we're not really focused on what's going in and out. You're right. We look at the balance once in a while. And
oh, I've got money. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out of sight, out of mind. That can be very detrimental if you leave it, you know, out of mind for too long. And
For me, one of the most important aspects about a budget is that it gives me control over like what I, there are things about, you know, my expenses, fixed expenses that I can't change, right? You know, the housing payment is the same every month, the car payment might be the same every month, et cetera. But there's a lot of room for me to make different choices in my variable expenses, the things that the purchases I'm making that don't, aren't the same amount every month. So by when I track those expenses, I can go, oh, I'm spending $58 every month on lattes. Well, I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
discretionary spending can really creep up on you. And when you step back and really assess the situation and see where your money's going, again, to your point, you know, it's okay to spend money. Your money is meant to be a tool, a resource for us to live our life, but spend your money on things that are important to you, that have value to you, that add value to your life. And if you're looking at your discretionary spending, thinking, oh, you know, I know my partner and I were spending a lot of money going out to eat. Now, we do like to go out to eat, but it was just excessive and we weren't getting that great of meals. It wasn't, we weren't enjoying the experiences and we had to really, step back and say, is this where we want to spend? Is this the best use of our discretionary money?
Sort of comes down to a lifestyle analysis, right? Like,
absolutely.
Interesting. Is there a formula, you know, in terms of, I mean, I'm not a financial analyst or advisor. So is there a formula that you give clients in terms of like what to spend, what to save and what to invest?
Not a formula per se, because everybody's situation is different. It's all relative, right? So it really comes down to tailoring a plan that best works for each client and that they can follow. I mean, just like a fitness plan or a nutrition plan, if I give a client a financial plan that is way too difficult, way too stringent for them to follow, they're not going to do it. So I find the best approach is starting with small steps, you know, saving with a purpose. And once we build up that emergency savings, then making sure we're investing enough into retirement accounts and then the investment accounts. So no, not a formula, but I equate it to like the financial pyramid. You know, at the base of the financial pyramid, you've got to have your emergency savings. That is my number one tip to every client. You know, if something unfortunate arose that you didn't have insurance for, where would you get the money? And a lot of people, that's credit cards, you know, and that is not a good place to be turning in an emergency. Yeah. So you want to have minimum 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses in an emergency account. Now, what dollar amount is that? Well, that is different. What does it take to run your household for 3 to 6 months? If you lost your job, if you became injured, or you just had, your refrigerator goes and your car breaks down, you know, those things kind of happen in threes that are large expenses. Where are you going to get that money from? Yeah. And once you have that 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses in the emergency account, then I assess retirement accounts with clients. So how much are you contributing to your retirement accounts each year? What does your employer contribute? Make sure they're maximizing at least their employer match if they have one. Yeah. And then, you know, the upper level of the financial pyramid is, you know, investment, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs. So it really is about, you know, kind of stacking that, you know, the different levels of investment knowledge.
So the key here, of course, is to gain knowledge. Once we have the knowledge, then we can make informed decisions about money so that we're in control of our money. It's not in control of us. I guess this is really what you're talking about.
100%. It's about being educated. It's about being involved and knowing what is going on in your financial life, in your financial picture. You know, just as we know that our physical health is important, we know that our mental health is important, our financial health is important too. And just like you go to the doctor at least once a year for your checkup, you should be meeting with your financial advisor at least once a year to review your portfolio, to review your budget, and to make sure that you're on track to meet those short and long-term goals. You know, yeah. If you have no idea what's going on, and you're not measuring your progress, how can you know if you will be able to hit those targets? Yeah.
You know, this might seem like an abrupt shift, but I think these two things are very much correlated. You have a lot of training and expertise in the fitness world too. And of course, we both know how obsessed our culture is with beauty and fitness, and women struggle so much with body image. What do you see a correlation between like what women spend their money on and their body image issues?
Oh, sure. Especially in today's age of, you know, Botox and lip fillers, yeah. And you see
looking young, chasing youth.
The fountain of youth. It is interesting to, you know, when I hear clients say, well, I can't afford that, or, you know, I can't afford to put $500 a month in my IRA, but, you know, a pretty personal relationship with a lot of my clients, but you know that they're spending that that amount of money on hair appointments and nails, yes, and pedicures and spa days. Yes. So, you know, we put a lot more emphasis and importance on outward beauty than making sure we have good financial health.
Yeah. So what would you want to say to women about, you know, their value and where they think their value comes from when it comes to physical well-being and body image? And because again, we know as women that how we look on the outside affects how we feel on the inside. I mean, that is a reality. But what would you say to women like to help them strike that balance? Because yes, I know women, I'm not one of them, but I know women who spend hundreds of dollars on a monthly basis on their outward appearance, whether it's the gym membership, whether it's, as you say, the dermatologist, the fillers and the Botox, et cetera. What would you say to those women who are struggling with their own value and also their relationship with money?
Yeah, I would say, you know, that it's difficult, right? In this culture that we live in, the world that we live in, and everybody has filters on their pictures, and you want to keep up this image, and we're bombarded with, like, you know, just beauty and weight loss, and you know, it's all about looking good. And, you know, when you do look good, you feel good. I get that. But I think that when you become obsessed with it and it starts to impact you negatively financially or affects your mental health negatively, then that's really about a mindset shift in knowing what your worth is. And I would say to women that your worth isn't just about your looks. You know, you are so much more. You might be a mother or a businesswoman or, you know, somebody's daughter, sister. You are not defined by your beauty, and you shouldn't let that control your life. There's so many other important aspects to a woman that makes her beautiful besides outward beauty. I think that inner beauty shines through much more than, you know, all of these man-made aesthetics that have become just so popular in our culture.
You know, and I truly believe that, I mean, all of us want, we're all chasing after happiness through moments of pleasure. But, you know, that inner peace, that inner contentment, that inner joy that is so much, you know, more longer lasting, you know, permanent, really. Part of that comes from the peace of mind of being financially savvy and smart with your money and intentional. I mean, I, you know, I guess if we're going to just really summarize it, being intentional in your life includes being intentional with your money.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine line too about, you know, putting too much emphasis on money. Money doesn't create happiness. Money can't buy happiness, but, you know, it can provide some security. It can give you a level of stability and freedom. That's one of the courses I teach too, is financial freedom. And that doesn't necessarily mean having more money. It means being smart with your money, being intentional with your money. No matter what level of income or level of assets that you have, you've got to be intentional. You've got to be disciplined. And in order to reach those goals and have that financial freedom, it doesn't necessarily, financial freedom to me doesn't necessarily mean being a millionaire or a multimillionaire.
Right.
You know, it means living a lifestyle that's comfortable to you, that you have, your needs are met. You spend money on things that you enjoy and you have that inner peace and happiness.
Yeah. You're living within your means and you're not having to stress out about money every month. I'm just curious, I should have asked you this at the beginning. What made you interested in being, you know, you've spent so much time being educated in the financial world. What drew you to that in the first place, if I may ask?
The universe. It was, it wasn't intentional.
Really?
It was not intentional at all. It actually, after I had my son, I went back to school to finish my degree. I hadn't finished that. So I went back and I got a degree in health services management. And from there, I thought I would come out with this degree, apply, get jobs. That didn't happen. So I found myself doing life insurance applications on the phone. And then was approached by what MetLife, which is now Bright House, to join their team. And as the universe would have it, I randomly met, like, who is my best friend now. She was a financial advisor. And we started this conversation. And it's kind of a long story, but, you know, she was in the right place at the right time, crossed my path, and talked to me about becoming her partner, being a financial advisor. And I just thought, why not? You know, let me give it a try. And kind of the rest is history. And then, you know, from there, I had this successful career and got a best friend out of this.
Isn't that cool?
It was very cool.
It's funny how that does happen, right?
We
meet people who are sort of meant to be in our lives for a purpose, and we look back on the experience and go, that's why I met them.
Right. We tell God our plans, he laughs at us.
And
right?
He laughs at us. Exactly.
Right.
So, tell everybody a little bit about the courses that you teach as we begin to wrap up here.
Yeah, so I do transformation coaching, and my programs are tailored. I think everybody is an individual, so I don't have just a one size fits all solution. I tailor the program to each individual client. That may include one of my areas of expertise, or it may include all of them. I have clients that come to me and are looking to improve their physical health, improve their nutrition. I work with clients. I have a financial goddess program, financial freedom platform. And I've got clients that solely want to focus on just their financial fitness. And then I've got clients that, you know what? I need to revamp everything. I need all of it. So they've got those clients that we just are doing complete mindset shift and tying all of those things together. And it's interesting to see how in so many cases that how closely related are mindset around fitness and nutrition and finance can be very similar in, you know, in some interesting ways. That's on my website, ShanoaMiller.com. For more info, people can send me a private message and talk more about my private coaching program.
Right, and we'll make sure to put the link to your website in the description for the episode. Shanoa, if there was one thing, we always got to synthesize it down to one thing. If there was one thing that you would want to share with women about anything that we've talked about today, or even not talked about today, in terms of raising their sense of value in themselves, what would that be?
It would be confident in who you are. I recently really become a lot closer in my walk with God, and it has really given me an inner peace that I was searching for. I would tell women to never settle. Know your worth. Know your value, and don't take anything less than what that is, because you are important, you are worth it, and be involved in your financial health, be involved in your physical health, educate yourself, be independent, and you can do this. You are not alone, is the message them spending. We as women, we need to support each other, uplift each other. And there have been some times in my life I've felt very alone, and I want women to know you are not alone. There are resources out there. There are people and women that have been through similar circumstances, and there are people that care about you and want to help you.
So be a participant in your life, not just an observer.
I love that.
Shanoa, thank you so much for joining me today. This is such an important topic, and I definitely want you back, because I think there's a lot of aspects to all of this that we could really, spend more time talking about. So thank you so much. It's been great having you here.
Thank you, Demi, so much. I appreciate it.
For more episodes, just go to debbiecaudle.com. And while you're there, get your free copy of my guide, 10-Step Relationship Rescue Roadmap.